Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live, weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. Each Monday during the 11 a.m. hour, we talk about money and the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Big companies, small companies, nonprofits, all of them struggling to stay afloat, and that means many of them are making deep cuts to their budgets and staff. The federal government reports that 701,000 jobs in the U.S. were lost in March. State leaders say that here in Minnesota, nearly 300,000 people filed for unemployment during the last 2 weeks of March. And even with unemployment checks and economic stimulus checks on the way soon, many Minnesotans are losing sleep right now because they don't know how they will be able to pay their bills in the weeks and months ahead. NPR's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell is joining me now. Hi, Chris.
How are you doing?
Hi, Chris. I feel like we're in this relationship where every week we got to sit down and let's talk, Chris.
And we got to talk. We have
got some problems, Chris.
We have an economy that is just, it's on this downward draft. And as you mentioned, we have 10 million people have filed for unemployment claims. If you look around the country, the unemployment insurance system is overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. If you look at New York State, they have such an old computer system, what's called a legacy system. They're bringing back people who know COBOL, which is a programming language from, you know, an earlier era. They're bringing people back to try and keep these systems running. And so the unemployment rate is actually much more than we're even seeing in the numbers.
And I think, you know, from a personal point of view, what's really hard about now is that it's not just your own household. It's your neighbor. It's your cousin. It's your mama. It's your aunt. It's your uncle.
Right.
So the extended families are affected, and people that you might have leaned on in the past for help, they're suffering too.
They are. And I think it's important because I love talking about the economy, and we can talk more about what's happening to this economy. And of course, money is important, and what is the government doing with the fiscal stimulus and what the Federal Reserve is doing. But, you know, when times were good, we talked a lot about our networks. You know, I'd come on your show and talk about, you know, how do you get a job? You tap into your network, the people you know, the colleagues, your friend, people from the church and temple and 2-3 degrees of separation. Well, now that network is a really important part of your safety net. And I think one of the most important things that people can do during this time is reach out to the people that they know, people in your network, and say, how are you doing? Are you okay? And if someone's lost your job, do you have a project you can help them out with? Can you send them some money? Can you just be someone that listens to their situation? But I do think that our families, our extended families, our network of people that we know, that's an incredibly important part of our network. And it's not emphasized enough how important that is.
So we should ask each other for help.
You should ask each other for help.
Well, let's start with the unemployment claims. The numbers are shattering records. Last week, 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment, doubling the number from the week before. We're looking at more than 10 million people in the U.S. who just lost their jobs in less than a month. The numbers are just unimaginable. I mean, we just haven't seen anything like that.
We haven't seen. So what we're looking at, so Goldman Sachs came out with a forecast. And what Goldman Sachs is saying, you know, 15% unemployment in the second quarter, which is, you know, April, May and June. So, you know, that's where, you know, and it could even be, and the Federal Reserve Bank in St. Louis sees even higher unemployment rates. So economic activity is just contracting. We can see it. Construction is contracting. The restaurants are closed. The retail establishments, the shopping malls are closed. And so it's just having the spillover effect in my spending, right, is your income. Out there. And now if I'm not spending, someone isn't getting that income. So the ripple effects are really powerful. And what makes it so difficult to deal with is the uncertainty. So a lot of it really depends on the virus. Social distancing appears to be working. There is a lot of economic conversation about how to get this economy going again as the virus has less of a vicious impact on our society and our people. But again, there's a lot of uncertainty attached to that.
For people who are filing for unemployment here in Minnesota, you know, they've run into some frustration, as people across the nation have in these online systems, yeah, or the phone systems. So what should people do while they're waiting for money to land in their accounts so that they can pay their bills?
So I think there's a couple things you can do. One is all the classics. And, you know, the classics, we refer to them, we talk about them. They actually are useful exercises at a time like this. So one is you just simply look at your spending. You look at your budget. What are you spending your money on? And then you make priorities. And a priority is really, I think, probably three things right now, right? It's your shelter, whether that's your rental check or your mortgage check, your utilities. And I would include as a utility in these days, your internet connection. Because that is just so important to staying in touch if you can manage that internet connection and if you have an internet connection. And then you look at some other bills and you say, you know, I really hope that I can pay them at some point, but my credit card, I'll pay the minimum, or you know what, I may not be able to pay that. I do think that whatever you're dealing with that you're not thinking about paying, contact your lender. You know, if you can't make your rental check, contact your landlord. If you can't make your mortgage payment, contact your mortgage servicer. If you're not going to make your credit card debt or you're going to kind of defer, you know, contact the credit card company. You know, everybody understands.
Well, that's a valuable piece of information because a lot of like the utility companies, a lot of different places that you would normally send money to, they have some special policies in place right now.
That's right.
And they are aware that people aren't able to pay their bills. So they're working to try to, you know, set up payment plans. So right. By reaching out, that's actually something very powerful and tangible that you can do.
And of course, as we all know, this isn't your fault. Right. No one is saying this is your fault. You're not. Why didn't you save? Why didn't you do this? So, yes, there are these programs. By the way, a lot of these programs, it's wonderful they exist. They can be really frustrating. They can move more slowly than you would like. But I still think it is important. Make priorities. Decide what you really need to spend. Contact your servicer, your lender, if you can't, you know, make those bills. Look for those programs, as you said.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. NPR senior economics contributor Chris Farrell is here as we take your phone calls. If you have a question about money matters, layoffs, retirement savings, taxes, stimulus checks, we're going to be talking about it, but we want to hear your questions as well. You can call us this hour at 651-227-6000 or leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR, and I'll read your comment or question on the air here. So those economic stimulus checks from the federal government, also on their way soon, maybe 2 weeks, maybe at this point, away from
receiving
those.
Yes, that is what they seem to be saying.
Right. And they really move pretty swiftly on that. You know, the leaders in Congress and approving it and making it happen. But we know that still won't be enough for many families.
It's not going to be enough. And there have been glitches, and they are moving incredibly fast, as you're absolutely right. But there have also been various glitches that are going on. But the checks are going to be coming out. As you mentioned, 2 weeks is what they're hoping for. And it will help out a lot. And again, if you're negotiating with your landlord, if you're negotiating with your mortgage provider, this will help you. And I also want to add one other thing, thinking about priorities. If you're going to be getting a refund on your taxes, file. Now, I know you don't have to file to July 15th right now, but if you're going to be getting a refund, file so you can get that refund.
Yeah, don't wait on that.
Don't wait on that. Right. Don't wait it.
And then when I get the refund, put it in savings, use it to pay, prioritize, maybe spend it in a different way than you normally have in the past?
It obviously depends on your circumstances, but boy, that would be money that I'd be sitting, I'd say, you know what, this is going into the savings account and I'm not going to spend it right away because I'm going to figure out my priorities on my bill. Because a lot of people, they're going to make the April rent check, but what happens in May?
Right?
Or what happens in June? So that's why I would be really cautious. If you think about the household, you really want to be cautious with your spending. You want to spend as little as you possibly can, which is why the federal government and the Federal Reserve are offsetting your caution with what's called fiscal and monetary stimulus.
Because we don't know what's around the corner.
No.
I think that's another one of the frustrations.
The uncertainty is great. And as I say, there's a lot of good commentary coming out about what will it take to get this economy going again. It'll be slower. It won't be the same. It's not more than likely not going to come roaring back. It's going to come out more slowly. So this is something we're going to be living with for a while.
And the government, they're working on another fiscal package. Did we talk about that?
Yes.
It sounds like there could be a second round of stimulus checks.
Oh, there is no question there's going to be another round of stimulus checks. There was a conversation started by President Trump about a big infrastructure spending program. And he's saying, think big, think bold, infrastructure. There's been pushback on that. Not that infrastructure is a bad idea. In fact, infrastructure is a really good idea. But again, it's just the questions that you're raising about that rental check, about that mortgage payment. So I think there's going to be a real strong incentive to get cash into people's hands, which may mean one way of doing that is just extending the period of time when checks are going out to people and various other programs to help people out.
And our landlords, are they getting a break as well? Are there things that landlords can do? Because they have to, they've got bills to pay as well.
They do. And there's an interesting alliance where, you have renter groups and landlord groups in the Twin Cities, for example, and elsewhere in Minnesota are coming together just for this reason. They can't, so they're not going to be able to evict somebody. But they're trying to work together to get money to the landlord. So if a renter can't pay their rent, the landlord can still get paid through another program. Mm-hmm. And so because the landlord also has their bills. And a lot of landlords are small businesses.
Right.
And they're not living on very cushy margins, and they don't have any savings because I think what's the adage? Most small businesses are three weeks away from failure. Mm-hmm. So yes, the landlords need help, and there is movement, and there's recognition that this point in time, you normally think of landlords and renters as somewhat of friendly adversaries. Let's say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're in the same boat this time.
If you're just joining us again, we're talking about the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and taking your phone calls. NPR's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell is here, and we're talking about money matters. You can join the conversation by calling us at 651-227-6000. Leave me a message on Twitter as well. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Right now, Chris, we have a listener in Ely we're going to bring into the conversation, and this is Bria. Good morning, Bria.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I am an emergency medicine physician assistant, and I work with local manufacturing companies in northern Minnesota, and we're trying to make personal protective equipment for our local hospitals, including for myself. My family owns a business called Wintergreen Northern Wear, and we have such an opportunity up here to make really quality PPE for our communities and to provide really good jobs for people. But small businesses are having a really hard time getting the materials that we need. We have the tools, we have the talent, we have the team, we're ready, we can make readily available equipment, but we are struggling to get support from the state to get the materials to small businesses to make this happen. And we're constantly outbid by large companies. Seems like resources are getting filtered to major companies like Carhartt that are making 50,000 gowns, for example. But we're not getting those gowns to our communities. I'm an emergency medical provider. I still wear a handmade cloth mask. And I am trying to make PPE for myself, but also for the community. And just what resources are available for businesses that are ready to be a part of this solution to prepare for COVID-19. We don't know what will happen or how bad it will be, but I want to make sure we're prepared and we need help.
Yeah, and I think this is a really important story. And so what is happening is, for example, you have Brooks Brothers has turned its factories over to be making PPE equipment. Allen Edmonds, the shoe company, has done the same thing. So you have more and more businesses are doing this, but it's real. I think what she's hit on is the importance of these supply chains. And it is difficult for a lot of smaller businesses to compete for these supply chains. And that's where the state can come in and help out a lot of these small businesses, maybe carve out a position for them, particularly because this is providing for jobs and income up in rural Minnesota, up mm-hmm. in Ely. And but you've also noticed, I believe it's, a number of the local craft liquor businesses have turned into making hand sanitizer.
The distillery.
Yeah. That was the word I was looking for. Thank you. So this is really fascinating what's happened. This is really important. And it also has emphasized how important are these supply chains mm-hmm. to our economy. So I think her call, and hopefully there's someone in government that's listening to this program, and I'm guessing that there is. I think that is something that could really help small business out.
That was Bria in Ely, an emergency physician assistant. And I just wanted to say, Bria, thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for calling in as well. Chris, we have another call. This is in St. Paul. We've got Jim on the phone. Good morning, Jim.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My question is, well, I have no car payment. I have no house payment. I paid it off. I have no credit card debt. I'm doing my taxes for 2019, and I got locked out. And the unemployment office told me to call Wednesday, and they'll give me a special code to get to do my taxes. My question is, am I paranoid and in taking out a large amount of cash, or what's your thought on that, sir?
Well, we're confused. You said you got locked out when you were trying to do your taxes?
Yes, I had to have a special code number because I filed for unemployment in 2010. And in 2010, there's a different procedure now, and now for 2019. So I'm waiting for Wednesday to get the code number, and then I can do my taxes.
Okay, then.
But your question also is about should you withdraw a lot of money right now?
I withdrew a lot of money. The U.S. bank was closed in the lobby, so I went through drive-thru and withdrew a lot of money. Is that necessary, or
no?
What's your opinion on that?
Okay, so I think this comes up every time when we have a financial crisis, and it's really understandable, but I want to be really clear about this. You don't want to be withdrawing money, particularly if that money is going into, I don't know, the mattress, the safe at home. You want to keep the money in the banks. You have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation that is backing that. You have the Federal Reserve that is also in its own way backing that. So the safest place for your money is in a bank. Now, what a lot of people have done is they've sold stocks or they sold bonds and they put it into cash, a checking account, a savings account, a money market fund. That's not what I'm talking about. That's fine to do that. But taking money out of the financial institutions is a big mistake. If you think about the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, your money was safe. Your money will be safe this time around.
Right now, let's talk more about the closing of businesses, layoffs, and more than 10 million people applying for unemployment in the U.S. in March alone. NPR's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell is here with me today as we look at these issues and take your phone calls to hear what you are dealing with right now when it comes to your money during this pandemic. If you have a question or a comment or a concern, you can call us. The number is 651-227-6000. Also, you can leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. That said, let's go to Forest Lake and check in with Mike, who's on the phone. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm fortunate enough to have been able to retire early, and I retired in January.
Okay.
I was also fortunate in that I didn't think that the stock market was going to stay on its incredible climb, so I moved most of my money into money markets.
Okay.
So my question is, what happens to all these money markets with all the money that the Fed is dumping into the economy?
So there are two answers. One is in terms of your money market fund, the Federal Reserve is essentially supporting the short-term market, particularly the commercial paper market, which is short-term borrowing among corporations. And of course, a lot of the money market funds are made up of short-term treasury bills. So the Federal Reserve action is supporting that. There is sort of a second question that sometimes people are asking with all the support that's going out there. Will we end up with higher inflation because of all the money that the Fed is putting into the system? We may not. But the fact of the matter is, if you're in short-term money market funds, that kind of fund, and you look back at the experience of inflation when we had it back in the 1970s, once you had your money market funds were there and looking back, your short-term treasury bills pretty much matched the rate of inflation. So I think you're fairly protected from inflation if it does come back, and that's an open question. And the Federal Reserve is supporting the short-term market to keep it open. It's really important to how our economy, both the government and business, how they work.
Chris, I wanted to ask you about small business owners, because I know I'm reading a lot about loans and special programs that are available to try to help small business owners. What are you seeing about efforts to try to keep them open?
Okay, so, you know, the programs that have come out of the fiscal stimulus package have started poorly and sort of haphazard. And I was over the weekend was talking to a person that I know, and she was very open about it. She's sole proprietor, and the program was open to her, which is in the past often hasn't been open to sole proprietors. She's working with a wonderful banker, and they did all the forms and they got it done, and it was a lot of work. And then the banker had to send her an email the next day and say, well, they changed the form. We got to go back and we got to redo a whole new set of forms. Nonetheless, she does think that she is going to get money at the end of the day and is available to her. There are stories of a number of banks would not deal with anybody who didn't already have a loan out with them. Now the banks are moving away from that. So the programs have started out poorly, but I think people are starting to work through them. And the main thing that now is coming out is it was a $350 billion package, and you need way more money. There's just way more need out there. There's way more demand than there is going to be money there. So it's been a bad launch. It's been a difficult launch, and people need to be patient. But this money will help out small businesses.
And are we seeing individual cities across the nation also trying to do something to help the small business owners?
Yes, they are. And you're seeing that here in Minnesota. You're seeing that here in the Twin Cities. Because one of the things that I think has come out of this is we talk about the economy. We talk a lot about the big businesses, you know, the 3Ms, the Best Buys. You know, they have Ecolabs, have a dominant position. And then we talk about the venture capitalists, the entrepreneurs who are starting something maybe in the high-tech area are really interesting. And we don't pay enough attention. Sort of like the forgotten people of the economy are the small businesses that, a restaurant, a dry cleaner, you know, all these small businesses that are just make our economy go. And these are the small businesses that are really getting squeezed right now. And there is a tremendous demand for them to get these loans. And the way the loans work is, you know, if they're paying their people, then, essentially the loan will be forgiven. It actually becomes a grant.
And I think about some of the, you know, small business owners who I know personally and, again, not knowing when this will end and like just the people that they are employing. And I think of all of the hair salon owners and the barbershop owners who do have loyal clients. But, you know, what could their future possibly look like?
So here's the sad thing. A lot of businesses are not going to survive. I mean, that is just when you look at the way that the economic activity has shrunk and you look at a lot of these businesses are no different. You know, we talk about individuals haven't saved that much. These small businesses haven't saved that much.
Because they've been just trying to survive.
They've been trying to survive, make a living. Right. Just, you know, and so, yes, I think a lot of these businesses will not survive.
Let's take another call from a listener in Minneapolis. David is with us this morning. Hi, David.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead.
Thanks
with
for
your question.
My call.
Yeah,
I went ahead and filed my taxes early, actually kind of towards the end of January, and I found out that my student loans had defaulted, and my entire tax return was nearly $5,000 was swallowed up by a student loan debt. And I'm wondering, is there any appeal that I can go through to try to get that back during this time, or am I kind of out of luck on that?
You know, the way everything has been written so far, I would say this is a guess, but I would say you're probably out of luck, because a lot of it is from when the fiscal stimulus was written going forward. So I would check with a tax accountant professional and see what they can do for you. My guess is you're out of luck.
Chris, is there anything new with access to retirement savings? Last week when we talked about some changes about being able to access some of your retirement savings and not dealing with the same penalties that we've had in the past.
That's right. So the retirement savings, I mean, if you think about, for anybody who works for an employer that offers a retirement savings plan, for those people, that retirement savings is the bulk of their savings. You know, most people just, you know, you're saving because it comes out of your paycheck. And then, you know, you're struggling to pay the mortgage, raise the kids, trying to do your emergency savings. So that is your big pot of money. So they've loosened the rules for getting access to that money. They made it much easier to get access to that money. And actually, the way they did it was pretty good. Now, you always have to give that caution. This is your retirement savings. It's hard to save for retirement. Don't tap that right away. But the fact of the matter is, you have easier access to it. And if it comes down to paying your rent or not paying your rent, you're going to access it.
Before the pandemic, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of efforts to try to get a handle on all of this college student loan debt. Will that conversation look different moving forward, forgiving some of the student debt?
I hope so. I mean, I think one of the things that comes out, so just for the students who are out there, you can now go 60 days without paying your interest, and it doesn't, the technical term is, doesn't accrue. So they're not like adding it at the back end where you're still going to have to pay that interest. But I mean, I think this has raised all kinds of questions about our education system. Young people have too much debt. People who are graduating from college are going to be coming into a really tough job market, from one of the best job markets in recent history to one of the worst job markets in our history. And it raises a question for colleges and universities charging the kind of money that they are for online learning. A lot of colleges and universities, a number of them, not a lot, I shouldn't say, but a number of them are, their finances are fragile. So yes, this is going to lead to a real shift. And there is a conversation, and it's a conversation that I think is intriguing, which is, all right, the next fiscal stimulus, so does it just simply say all student loan debt is forgiven right now? And that is a serious conversation. Whether it happens, I don't know, but it's part of the, what do you want to call it, the checklist or the toolkit that policymakers are going through.
I've been thinking about those college students graduating in May and starting their job searches right now, or maybe they had already started their job searches, what they're coming out to.
Well, they're coming out to a really tough market. Now, obviously, I mean, that's like the understatement of the century, but here's what I would do. You're not helpless. First of all, we all know how difficult this is and care about young people. So if you're graduating from college or you're going to be graduating from college soon, you have all these people that you can reach out, that your parents might know, that you might know through your church or through your temple. Reach out. Talk to them. Have these conversations about, well, when the economy gets better, what do you think I should do? Or where could I put an application in here? So I think you still want to be proactive and you still want to apply for jobs. You want to apply for that internship, but also use that time to talk to probably your parents or your friends' network and gather as much information as you can.
And for so many of the people who have lost their jobs, are they looking at situations where if they are able to get new jobs, that they won't be looking at the same salaries that they had?
You know, the data is really compelling, and there's no reason to think it's going to be any different, that if you lose your job and you are 50 and over, that your next job is going to come with a lower salary, and the odds are it may not even have benefits. So, you know, your retirement savings, your health insurance. Mm-hmm. Now, this situation is so unique that maybe not quite the same, but it also depends how fast this economy comes back. If the economy comes back fairly quickly, then I think people are, you know, employers are going to be snapping up people right and left. But if it's a slow recovery, employers are going to be very cautious in their hiring.
Let's go back to the phone lines in Minneapolis. Nicole is on the phone. Hi there, Nicole.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. Go ahead with your question.
Well, I actually, it's kind of more of a statement. I'm self-employed as a contractor, and I've applied for unemployment help multiple times, and despite the bill passing, self-employed contractors are still not receiving any assistance. I've spoken with Commissioner Steve Groves, and he politely stated that I should apply for an SBA loan, which I have also done. And Wells Fargo has closed their SBA loan application process, as well as the fact that U.S. Bank, who I just got off the phone with, said that they haven't received any guidance yet from the federal government, and they are unable to offer loans at this point to anyone. And I have a lot of peers who own local businesses who are self-employed, who are currently just withering on the vine. We don't qualify for unemployment help at this point in time because the federal guidelines have not been issued to the state. And we also are not able to receive these loans that everybody's been talking about because there's no federal guidelines in progress. So at this point, there's nothing we can do and there's just no help. And I'm wondering, when do we actually see help?
Right. So a couple things. So there's the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis put out a number. So there's 700,000, a fifth of the workforce in Minnesota is self-employed. And in her circumstance and the situation that she's dealing with is not unusual. So I know what Steve Groves has been saying, which is, you know, you just keep applying for the unemployment insurance. As far as with dealing with the loans towards small business, the Small Business Administration loans, the loans that are going through the banks, her experience has been repeated here and around the country. And again, the only advice that you have, and it's so frustrating to say, is that you just have to keep applying. You have to keep reaching out. You have to keep reaching out to that banker because right now, the Treasury Department is overwhelmed. The Treasury Department did not give sufficient guidance. And actually, I'm very empathetic to the banks. But it does now appear that they are getting better guidance and they are trying to be more aggressive. But that is so, how should I say that? That is cold comfort to someone who's dealing with the situation like she is.
You can hear the urgency in her voice.
And absolutely.
She's doing everything she can.
She's doing everything right. Mm. She's doing everything right. The system is failing her. And the system is going to fail a lot of people, which is really sad to say.
Mm. I want to read some comments here on Twitter, some questions here. One person writes here, Chris, we're not eligible for stimulus funds from the government, but I've heard that the $1,200 checks are an advance on 2020 tax refunds.
No.
Is that true?
No.
No. All right. Another question from Kim. Kim writes, I filed an extension for 2018 taxes and still haven't filed. She says, I am getting a refund. Will I get the stimulus check having filed an extension or will I need to file first?
No, she's fine. It's they're looking back at your previous taxes, and so she's filed. It's okay.
But if she's getting a refund, Kim, don't you need to file? Don't
yes.
you want that refund, Kim?
Exactly.
Can I chime in on this one?
Yes, you should. Absolutely.
Get
you
that
want
paper
that refund.
Done.
You do not want to be lending the government money. You want to be getting what is owed to you.
All right. Let's take another phone call. In Minneapolis, Nancy is on the phone. Hi there, Nancy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call today.
Sure. Go ahead.
You guys already just talked a little bit about students coming out of college and mm-hmm. student loans. I have a son who is coming out of an orthodontia residency program. He's been in school for 8 years, going to dental school. He now has no job because none of the orthodontists are seeing patients and mm-hmm. nobody's hiring.
Right.
And I just wanted to ask Chris, is there, since he has not worked, he's been in school, is there any program or any options for, because he can't apply for unemployment, anything else he can do to get some financial relief?
I'm not really aware of anything that's going to be available to him. And again, my main thought is he does have a skill. There is a demand. So I'm assuming that he's doing this. But even though people are not hiring right now, it is using this time to line up his job for when, and I guess when.
He finishes dental school.
Times get better. And, you know, again, I think probably what he's going to end up doing is scrambling, and maybe he can get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, like so many people are trying to do. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't have any particular program that I can see will help him out. But I would talk to his school, and do they have any programs during this time?
Mm-hmm. In St. Paul, let's talk to Matt. And Matt, what can you share with us today?
Hey, thanks for the time. Mm-hmm. I just had like a quick comment and possibly a question to end it up with. I am currently a seasonal employee. My unemployment is running up pretty fast here. I did file my taxes, but I got a little bit to sit on. And I'm actually sitting very well, but I know a lot of people who are also struggling, being that their employment has been taken out from underneath them. And I have been talking with most of the tenants of my building and then other tenants of other buildings that our property owner owns. And we've all been getting different emails from the same tenant or from the same operating system saying different things and to different varying degrees based upon our rent. And it goes and ranges from we'll work with you and we'll communicate with you, please get a hold of us, to threatening legal action based upon missed rent. And then telling us that we should seek unemployment help and seek out other means to come up with their money. Otherwise, they will sue us for damages and lost income, basically. So I'm wondering if you could speak upon what we're going to do after all of this, if this all keeps continuing the way that it does, that we're not going to be working. And then also if you could guide the companies.
Matt, I'm sorry, we're down to our last few seconds here, but Chris, can you respond? Can landlords go after tenants like that?
No. I mean,
Not right now.
Mm-hmm. No. But he's right. This is a difficult situation.
All right. Well, I'm so sorry that we've run out of time, but the good news is that Chris Farrell will be back with us next Monday as we look at the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and take your questions. Thank you, Chris Farrell, NPR Senior Economics Contributor, and thank you to all of our listeners for sharing your stories and questions.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.